and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be with us tonight. Tonight I have with us Donald Yance, and we're going to talk about his book, Adaptogens in Medical Herbalism. And I have to say, this is probably one of the best books on this topic I have ever seen, and I've seen a lot of them. So thank you, Mr. Yance, for being on my show tonight, and I appreciate your coming. And if you don't mind, if you could just tell us a little bit about you before we get started, where you came from, you know, how you came to do what you're doing, and a little bit about your background, please.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me on, Eva, and that was a good introduction. My background is very interesting in that I read a book in high school called Back to Eden, which was written by Jethro Kloss, which is a book on herbal medicine, but what we would call now Thompsonianism, which was one of the sects of herbal medicine practiced in America, say, 100, 200 years ago. So that book kind of opened my eyes, and it really touched me spiritually first in that, hey, we have all these wonderful plants all over the world, both for food and medicine, often to make clothes from, dyes, provide us beautiful smells, beautiful things to look at, and we just feel that now we have modern medicine that we should just ignore this primitive medicine. So that book really touched my heart more than anything else and said, you know, I really love this. I really want to know more about how plants can help and heal people. And so that was my start, and I worked at a natural food store when I was 17 years old in Stamford, Connecticut, worked at one in New Canaan, Connecticut, one in Norwalk, Connecticut, and eventually had one and owned my own with a partner in Westport, Connecticut. I also spent 3 years living in a Franciscan Byzantine monastery. I'm professed as a Third Order Franciscan. And then in around 1988, I went on to do more formal education, both in nutrition and in herbal medicine, and became a member of the American Herbalist Guild, a member of the Society of Nutritionists, and opened my own practice, I think, in 89 to 90. And I had a clinic in Westport, Connecticut, and that kept growing and growing and growing until eventually I believed that my calling was to have a retreat center predominantly for cancer patients, which was in the late 90s at this point. And I also had written a book that was published in 1999 called Herbal Medicine, Healing, and Cancer, which is still to this day one of the best books written on herbal medicine and cancer. So then I moved to Oregon mostly to set up what I thought was a retreat center for cancer patients, that they would come and stay and I would care for them and giving them all the things that I felt were the right support, and also dive into a very deep and intimate relationship, which is something I crave. And that didn't manifest, so I had my clinic here. I still had one in Connecticut, and that one kind of got condensed to only be what's called a dispensary, where patients can get medicine still, but no one's practicing there. And my clinic grew here, and then I developed my own system of medicine, which I call the Eclectic Triphasic Medical System, which is a collaborative or integrative medical model where the predominant toolboxes are botanical medicine, nutritional medicine, dietary medicine, lifestyle medicine, and then contemporary or modern medicine, most notably pharmaceutical medicine. And so this word is just buzzword, is just thrown around, called integrative medicine, and I don't feel like anyone really has a good roadmap, so I decided to create that, and that's actually in my book, Adaptogens in Medical Herbalism. There's a whole chapter just dedicated on introducing the ETMS, because the concept, the ETMS concept, is very, very important to understand how I see medicine. And then at the foundation is these wonderful, wonderful plants we call adaptogens. And we see them more what I call adaptogenic formulations that normally have 5, 10, 15 different herbs in them together. And then often we want to combine those with other herbal formulas as well. So, and this has grown predominantly out of my clinical experience, working with hundreds to thousands of patients spanning over 3 decades now, as well as I spend 1 to 2 hours every day compiling research. There isn't a day that doesn't go by that I'm not at least 1 hour dedicated to research, writing, compiling data. So I have this other, what I call scientific modern way that I learn about medicine. I have a background in traditional medicine, which you gather wisdom from, modern medicine you get knowledge from. Then I sort of combine that with what I call logical, common sense thinking, with musical intuition, and then always a sense of what I call prayer and love and not fear, because medicine is very, very fear-based. And lastly, I apply something that I call critical thinking, which basically means actively and skillfully conceptualizing, analyzing, synthesizing, evaluating all kinds of information based on the host, the microenvironment, and then the disease itself, generated by observation, experience, reflection, reasoning, communication as a guide to belief and action. So I got a little long-winded there, but that kind of gives you the history of who I am. And I work under the auspices of a foundation that I created called the Madiri Foundation. So the clinic is the laboratory for the foundation, where we're also looking to do integrative research, and we're working right now with Ohio State to do a research project with advanced breast cancer, stage 4 breast cancer, refractory to pretty much everything that is possible to offer somebody. So they've failed all hormonal therapy, all chemotherapy, and 20 women will be assigned to our arm and 20 women will not, and all 40 women will get the same 2 drugs, and 20 will be treated by me in the ETMS system. We're working. I was in Israel in December lecturing for a week straight at Bellinson Hospital on integrative medicine with an emphasis on herbal medicine. So we're even in talking with them of doing some clinical research, as well as some other institutions around the country like Mercy Hospital in Baltimore. So we also have an education program. So I train physicians. I train acupuncturists in the model I've created. And I also am the founder and formulator for Natura Health Products, which is my product line. And the best way to kind of access me is through my own blog and website, which is just my name, DonnieYance.com, which is DonnieYance.com. And then I do great weekly blogs, both recipes to learning about herbs, to music, to spirituality. I kind of jump around a little bit, but that is the one thing I do geared towards the general public is my blog.
Do you phone consultations to people?
We predominantly do phone in our clinic. We predominantly do phone and Skype consultations. Probably 30% is live, and 70% is consulting. And I have two other practitioners in the clinic with me. And yeah, we work with people all over the world now. So we do. And there's a whole way that we set things up before. You know, we want people that are a good fit for us just as well as we're a good fit for them, meaning that I want them to really study and become very familiar with the ETMS and understand what a protocol looks like, which is basically customized herb formulas with a list of formulas, when to take it, both my dietary guidelines with very specific things to the patient that we'll lay out, recipes, herbal teas that are concocted, often topical formulas, sometimes suppositories. See, we have a compounding facility in our clinic, so we do a lot of customizing. And then also recommended pharmaceuticals, letters to the oncologist, blood tests that we need, and often pathology, because the pathology that is standardly taken is very limited when it comes to the amount of profiling we could do on a tumor. So basically, to break it down, is we assess the host, which is the person, And we do that mostly through energetic models, like in the ETMS, where I'm combining a lot of traditional Chinese medicine with eclectic medicine, a little bit of Ayurvedic medicine, and just using that as our assessment, and then also understanding the person. So we get to know who the person and what their symptoms are, what their skin quality is, what their tendencies are. And then we move over to the microenvironment, which is only learned through laboratory testing. And the basic premise is to alter the microenvironment to be the most conducive to the host, the most conducive to health, optimal health, the least conducive to disease or, in many cases, cancer. And then the third thing we do is we do a very elaborate assessment on the phenotype of the tumor, and looking at everything from mutation analysis to protein expression to in vitro sensitivity and resistant screening, to growth factor, to intracellular pathways that are abnormal. And then we can start to layer our protocol based on that information with the first goal, and this is where the adaptogens come in, the first goal is turning patients into superhuman beings, optimizing their health, building their life force. That is the first ground, because I don't care what someone has wrong. That is the most important thing to do, is promote an optimal state of health. Then you move on to everything else, and that's my core belief.
So I have a client who has advanced colon cancer, and she actually had, you know, one of those bags put in a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And she's desperately seeking someone. She wants to do a holistic route, but she's kind of, you know, she has to be here in Atlanta. Is that something that you could?
Yeah, that's something we do. And like I said, I want people to learn the ETMS, which is really finding the all of the pieces that fit together. For example, in colon cancer, we're of course going to bathe her cells and her body with a lot of botanical medicine. We're going to look at that microenvironment. I've done a 50-page paper on laboratory tests assessing the microenvironment, you know, whether we're looking at various growth factors, whether we're looking at hypercoagulative panels, whether we're looking at copper, zinc, and ceruloplasm. All of this stuff we're going to assess and change that. Then we'll look at her tumor profile, and we might ask her to do a Caris assessment. We might ask her to do a, you know, some molecular profiling. And within that, we may find some pharmaceutical support, which may be what I call in the box, but may be also out of the box. Sometimes we use certain drugs that are either not approved for a particular cancer, but approved for another with that, or we'll use something that's supportive, but not really considered a drug for cancer therapy. Some examples would be Plaquenil, which is a CXR4 inhibitor, which is a chemokine. We might use a COX-2 inhibitor if that's highly overexpressed, which 90% of the time in colon cancer it is, but very low dosages, because contrary to what most people are told, botanical medicine not only can be very protective to pharmaceutical medicine, but it can tremendously synergize and potentiate the action and be more global in its beneficial effects, because drugs are not global at all. They're very target specific, and inhibit drug resistance to those drugs. So there are so many ways that herbs support, yet most people are told there is a interaction that is perceived to be negative, when just the opposite is true. If you know what you're doing with your botanical medicine and you understand drugs, you can see miraculous benefits when the two are used together.
That's a wonderful thing.
But if the drugs are the wrong fit, this is the important thing, if the drugs are the wrong fit for the patient, all they are doing is damaging the patient and doing nothing beneficial.
So you can tell which drugs are the right ones to use based on testing? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we talked before the interview, and there's a couple of topics that I wanted you to touch on if possible. Mm-hmm. And they are estrogen dominance, metabolic syndrome, I was interested in leptin resistance, too. That was kind of interesting. Men's issues, oxidation, and I'll let you go there. And then there's
which one do you want to start with?
They're
all
about,
tied a little bit together. When you look at estrogen dominance and you look at insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome and you look at leptin resistance, they all can be, you know, we're looking at people. We're not looking at diseases. So, I don't like to just pigeonhole somebody into a label. I like to treat the person and not, you know, not necessarily. But these are ways that we can describe possibly some of the abnormalities that are wrong. And so with leptin resistance, I mean, it's very simple. Normally, anyone that is overweight, say more than 10-20% overweight, most likely is going to have some form of leptin resistance. And leptin is an adipose hormone that's very connected to proliferation of cancer cells. It drives a lot of aspects of cancer, particularly estrogen-positive cancer, but not exclusively by any means. And so when you have leptin resistance, insulin resistance, you often have a stagnant liver. That's going to create some estrogen stagnation as well, because everything needs to flow through the body freely. One of the things about promoting health is movement. So we want good oxygen circulating throughout the body. We want blood moving throughout the body. And we want energy moving throughout the body. So when that's moving and things aren't stagnant, you're much, much, much healthier. So often with estrogen dominance, with, say, some leptin resistance and insulin resistance, if it's a postmenopausal woman, then we have the whole issue of aromatizing, you know, a lot of hormones. So we have many, many tools. You know, we can go to botanical medicine, and we can start with, obviously, adaptogens. Now, adaptogens, by their very nature, are non-specific, meaning that they're not necessarily chosen just because of, like, I have insulin resistance, yet they're tremendous at improving insulin resistance. You look at plants like Opalopanax, which is the devil's club. You look at Panax quinquefolius, which is the American ginseng, Asian ginseng, Eleutherococcus senecosis. All of these plants have insulin-trophic-like effects, but it doesn't stop there. Their first effect is improving what I call the four life requirements, improving energy transfer, so we're utilizing oxygen more efficiently, glucose more efficiently, insulin more efficiently, lipids, fat more efficiently, and then protein and amino acids more efficiently. So the mitochondria is working well, the signaling of hormones is better, and we're mostly working through a pathway called increasing AMPK, which is a very important part, very important to insulin sensitizing. So then we combine those adaptogens with very specific plants like the mamortica, which is bitter melon, the pterostilbin, fenugreek, cinnamon, gymnemia. You know, these are more specific with insulin-trophic effects. And then if we need to work to modulate the estrogen effect and down-regulate aromatase enzyme, then we can work with things like berberine, chrysin, ursolic acid, the companion adaptogen, green tea extract. All those things improve that as well. So now we're packaging something, which is really what you need to do with botanical medicine. So we have our primary adaptogens, and then our supportive companion adaptogens, and then our specific insulin-trophic and leptin-trophic plants that are going to improve how we utilize our glucose, our insulin, all of our hormones. Then we might, with adaptogens, get this other benefit, which is the stress factor. So a lot of people's bodies, because of ongoing chronic low-grade stress, have shifted their metabolism around. So now they have adipose tissue, they have fat tissue that wants to hold on to all their fat. You know, basically they build up all these alpha-2 receptors and they get more leptin resistant. They shut their thyroid down a little bit by shunting free T3. And so the body gets very good. They of making what's called white adipose tissue, which is storage and good for making the body more insulated from cold, but not good for longevity and not good when it comes to modern-day diseases. Then we look at the other effect, the onslaught of environmental, what we call endocrine disruptors. You know, our bodies, all of us growing up have been bombarded by drugs from DDT to, you name it. You know, all of them are mimicking hormones like thyroid hormone or estrogen, and they're screwing with our endocrine system. That also leads to insulin resistance, estrogen dominance. So then we have to clear that out of the system, and I do that with, again, adaptogens, and then we use isothiocyanates, like compounds that are from the sulfur-rich cruciferous family, like broccoli sprout extract, cabbage sprout extract, with a little bit of sulfur amino acid, like a little bit of N-acetylcysteine, a little bit of the organic yeast-bound selenium, with a lot of phenolic compounds like pomegranate extract, rapeseed extract, and all of a sudden now our bodies are detoxifying these substances better. Then we work with things like fucoxanthin, which is a carotenoid from brown seaweed that activates the uncoupling protein 1 in those white adipose tissues, so it kicks their butt, so they start releasing the fatty acids for energy, not storage. A compound called forskolin from the plant called Coleus forskoli is really good at activating uncoupling protein 1 and enhancing cyclic AMP, so our metabolism is working more efficiently. And again, the adaptogens are having a stress protective effect on the body, so that stress is costing us less. Adaptogens don't change how we respond to stress. We make that choice. We can use effectors, nervines, and things that are going to basically quench or quiet down an overactive nervous system. But adaptogens, that's not their role. Adaptogens are going to protect us from the aftermath of long-term stress. They're going to help us recover quicker. They're going to help us respond better to stress. So they help us respond. They help us recognize often any adversary external substances, whether they be pathogens, environmental toxins, or even things like sleep deprivation or going to high altitude, anything like that. And then they improve our recovery and they resuscitate our body. So we get better energy, we adapt better, and we're protected better. That's what adaptogens do. Protect, adapt, energize. Three very important words.
So we covered estrogen. How does that tie in? And if you can say more?
Well, yeah, on the estrogen front. So here's the other thing. Often there's also issues with the thyroid, which I don't believe, other than in extreme circumstances, to do hormone replacement therapy. If you build the endocrine system and nourish it up, and then use some specific things, namely, like seaweed. I don't give people iodine supplements. I give people organic, hand-derived seaweed powder. The company I use is called Nature Spirits, but there's a couple of decent brands out there. Ryan Drum is another good manufacturer. Maine Coast is another good one. So I give people about a half a teaspoon, three-quarters of a teaspoon a day of seaweed, change their diet to support their endocrine system better, work with adaptogens and what I call kidney essence tonics. So you have your adaptogens and your essence tonics, which often are when you read my book, I call secondary adaptogens, which means that they really support our endocrine system, both inwardly and outwardly, but maybe they don't have the scientific research to show and demonstrate their stress protective effect that primary adaptogens do. See, to be a primary adaptogen in my book, you need 10, 20 years of hundreds and hundreds of clinical trials, even human clinical trials. And so when you look at an herb like Eleutherococcus senecosis, there's over 3,500 scientific papers written on that, spanning well over 60 years. And so that's what I call, you know, research. And a lot of it is human research, some is animal, and some is laboratory, but a lot is human research. If people only knew how validated these plants are, that's why my book has 4,000 citations. So when there's a thyroid problem, I like seaweed, and I use N-acetyltyrosine, which acts, and then often the yeast-bound selenium. So selenium, vitamin D, zinc, and then certain botanicals that nourish that thyroid and nourish the essence. And that could be with an estrogen dominance factor. Another herb I like a lot is Vitex, which is chafe tree. That herb is very, very good at balancing the corpus luteal shift. And so there isn't this, so that LH clicks in the way it's supposed to, so you're not overproducing estrogen. So you have liver clearance, you have the effects of herbs such as Vitex. They're going to help balance that effect. You have the adaptogens, then you often have some thyroid support. And little by little, you're cooperating and working harmoniously with the innate healing body. You see slow but sure change. And then the person is making as much of the change as anything else that they're doing. So there's a cooperative effect between the medicine we're doing and the person's own life force. That's what I call really good medicine. Not giving people things that, yeah, you may change them, improve that, but then they still aren't really better. You're just using natural medicine in place of pharmaceutical medicine, but your concept is still the same. You're not working to support the innate healing body.
So what about men's issues, testosterone issues, aromatase conversion, prostate issues? Can you talk to us about that for a few minutes?
Sure. So with that, we have obviously two major factors of men. You know, it's complicated. You know, you have prolactin as well. But two big factors that happen with aging with men. You have where you have androgen resistance. Again, we hear the term insulin resistance and leptin resistance, but all hormones get resistant as we get older. It's not everything. So you have androgen resistance because you don't have complete, and you have estrogen resistance in postmenopausal women. They don't have low estrogen. Why would estrogen-related cancers all get higher and higher the older a woman lives if they don't have estrogen? They do. It's just not efficient anymore in their body. It's resistant, just like insulin. Is not getting used anymore in the body properly. It's not that you don't have insulin. With insulin resistance, you have too much insulin. It's just not driving the glucose into the cell properly. The same is true with androgen. So you have these androgens that are resistant, and one of the two channels that it goes down is either gets aromatized and converts into estrogen, so men become more women-like as they get older, or they have too much of the 5-alpha reductase converting it into the androgen byproduct, dihydrotestosterone, and then they're losing their free testosterone. So those are two problems. And so how we look at that, we nourish the what I call the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal testosterone or androgen system. So again, the HPA, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, is the hub of the endocrine system. So it kind of sits in the middle, then everything else kind of networks into that. So when we work with our primary adaptogens, so we have that formulation in place, then we work with our sort of kidney yang or kidney nourishing plants, which I use two formulas predominantly that feature herbs, which are all mentioned in my book, like Tribulus terrestre, which has a compound called protodianacin. You have the Cissus quadrilaris, which has a compound called ketosterones. You have the Rapunctium carthamoides, which has compounds called ectosterones. You have Juga turkestone, which has the turkestone is another ectosterone. You have the plant Uricoma longiflora, That's another nourisher. So you have all of these kind of male nourishing plants along with the adaptogen. So you put those two things together, and then you may have some specific herbs that help with the prostate itself, which Serranoa or Sal Palmetto is probably the most noted plant. But other herbs that are really good that help that are similar, Pygium africana, which is similar in a lot of ways to Serranoa, and it's a slightly endangered species, so I use quite a bit less of that than Serranoa. And then we have other herbs like urtica root, which is the nettle's root. We have a great herb called Creativa, which is also very good for prostate health. Pumpkin seeds and zinc. You know, as we're aging, one of the most common nutrient deficiencies is zinc. The older you, I mean, I run zinc levels, and pretty much I'd say 4 out of 5 people are severely deficient in zinc. So, and zinc is one of the areas is male reproductive health, and so selenium is important for male reproductive health, and then clearing all of those endocrine disruptors, because they're wreaking havoc in the prostate too, and I use a formula of mine called Cell Guardian for that. And so it's not too difficult to significantly over a 2 or 3 month period normalize a man's testosterone level, lower his dihydrotestosterone, lower his estrogen, get his body more muscular, less body fat, without doing any kind of hormonal intervention, just with plant medicine.
So can people buy these compounded things that you have? Do you have them?
Yeah, you could look on for that. For the formulations, you would go to the Natura website, which is naturahealthproducts.com, N-A-T-U-R-A, healthproducts.com, and you can kind of view a lot of the different formulations. And then, obviously, in the book, you can learn a lot about those other plants, too. I mean, the book has, more than just, you know, it's a book written on adaptogenic formulation. You know, I think of herbal medicine like I do diet, is that you really need to bathe the body with a lot of different colorful, healing foods. Not one single food is the right magic food. Herbs are the same way. I think 99% of the people don't do great on a single herb, but when you put good formulations together, people thrive and do very, very well. And that's the way traditional herbal medicine has been practiced. You know, traditional Chinese medicine is the oldest system of medicine, maybe with Ayurvedic, and both systems learned thousands of years ago to formulate, not to give single herbs. And in Chinese medicine, they're usually 5 to 20 herbs, and in Ayurveda, they're usually 10 to even 25 herbs in a formula.
All right, let's see.
Another herb that I was thinking of that I forgot was Mucuna pruens, which is contains about the extract that I use is about 30% L-DOPA, and L-DOPA enhances dopamine, and dopamine can also help with raising testosterone as well as helping with mood, and that's kind of a unique mechanism to different from a lot of the other herbs, is the marijuana. So when someone has a male has a high prolactin level, prolactin antagonizes testosterone and particularly dopamine. Marijuana is one of the better herbs to use in that case.
Are you moving around?
No, I'm stationary.
Are you on a portable phone by any chance?
No.
Got some funny noise that just came in. That's kind of strange. Anyway, that's really kind of interesting about the dopamine and the testosterone, because some people have genetic testing and they find out they have like no dopamine, their dopamine levels drop, and the men have no, can't hold on to testosterone. Would that be the reason why?
Why? Yeah, and Mucuna pruens is a good herb for dealing with that particular issue. And then I work with a formula that features N-acetyltyrosine, which was much more efficient than tyrosine. So the N-acetyltyrosine and the Mucuna pruens are, you know, what I call two of the best things for correcting that. And there are other good herbs for helping with dopamine, but that is the two that I always do, and they're very, very effective for that.
That's interesting to know. All right, could you talk a little bit about, you know, there's a hot topic right now. We talked about this before, methylation problems and MTHFR genetic mutation. Do you have anything that you can educate us with about that?
Well, it is a hot topic right now. I mean, I think because the functional medicine people are doing a lot of lecturing on that, and so I feel like, you know, that's one of, and with the genome testing now, we're sort of learning, but, you know, we'll probably find out in another 5 to 10 years that we're going to expand that to be even much greater outside of just methylation. And so with, you know, there are a lot of different methyl defects. There's two that are very, very common. One is the, I think, 12998 defect, and the other is a 677C, I believe, defect. And so those are the two most common defects, and sometimes you're homozygous and sometimes you're heterozygous, which means that sometimes you have both parents that have given you the mutation, and sometimes just one. And sometimes you can have one from one parent and two from the other. So it can be very complicated, and I don't think we have time to go into a detail. But to keep it simple, to help support methylation in a more global way, which I believe is always the starting point, rather than trying to get too analytical about the information, let's just start bathing the body with a few basic things so we can improve transformation to methionine from homocysteine and a couple of the real important things we want to do. So I mostly use a combination of naturized nutrients, predominantly naturized methyl donor nutrients, and reduced forms of B vitamins with some other supportive agents as well that are important, whether it be betaine. And so I like using the family again, just like we think in terms of a meal, rather than any one thing. I don't use just straight B12, straight folinic acid or reduced forms as isolates. So I normally start with the entire family before I move into any one thing. Then the other important thing to correct is the gut flora. So the next thing I'll do along with that is normally use a very, what I call, intensive care probiotic. And one of the ones I'll use is Therobiotic, which is by Claire Labs. And another one that I use is by Bioimmersion. So I use these intensive care probiotics, which normally I'm just doing for weeks, up to a couple of months. And then I believe that it's good to kind of wean off of them and let your flora do its thing if you're supported correctly. And then we're doing our botanical agents as well along with that. Even some of the herbal compounds like the pterostilbin compound called pterostilbin, which is from pterocarpus marsupium, the phytoalexin, the other phytoalexin compound called resveratrol. These compounds are shown to improve methylation in the body. So between your your renatured or what I call naturized grow company B vitamins, which are supported with things like beta-glucans, superoxide dismutase, it's a food. It's not a isolated nutrient. I try to avoid or restrict the usage of isolates, and that's both herbal isolates, but even more so nutrient isolates. So I don't use standard vitamins and minerals. They're mostly synthesized, and they're not, generally speaking, good for people to be taking. And that's everything from vitamin E to selenium to vitamin C to B vitamins. I stay with naturized nutrients, and then the coenzyme forms or the reduced forms to help support and provide the body with what it might be lacking. So in other words, when you have methyl defects, you may have a lot of folic acid, but it's not getting to the reduced form. You may have a lot of B12, but it's not getting to its reduced form. And so you can't keep piling it on because that could be problematic. Whereas if you use lower dosage use the reduced form with the naturized form, and then use a lot of what I call the companion things to do along with that, you're usually going to be much better served. And I've had very, very good results with that approach.
And what would be the companion things? And also, which one of your products is the ones that you're... I'm looking at your page.
Well, I don't have a specific one, but I'll tell you, I use Cell Guardian because that supports sulfation and methylation together. And so you're going to get... Because they work together. You know, they work... You know, they one pathway is not isolated from another pathway, and that kind of is the bathing the body with all of the intrinsic substances that would help. So I'm going to use Cell Guardian and then a product by Designs for Health called Homocysteine Supreme, and then the general, what I call multi-formula, which we have called Nutri-One, which is a powdered multivitamin, multi-mineral, super greens, all derived from food, everything. And so I usually give, you know, a scoop of that, two or three caps of Cell Guardian, and anywhere from 2 to 4 caps of Homocysteine Supreme. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say 90%+ of the people will get better doing that. And then the probiotic.
So what happens, and this is a question, I'm just probably stating it funny, the gene, it stops expressing. Does that happen?
Well, it's hereditary, you know. So you've inherited mostly because if your parent, like if one parent was a smoker and didn't eat enough vegetables, they can be messing with their DNA. And so if someone through lifestyle and environmental reasons have developed some abnormalities, then you pass that on. And so your genes are damaged from birth, but what you're doing is limiting the mistakes and helping support the body make up for that and give it a little bit extra of what it might benefit from to compensate for the abnormality, which you can do, you know, and then reduce epigenetic expression. So reduce along with aging, we're getting more and more mutations occurring or some of these hereditary genes are getting activated because of our aging process and our lifestyle, and so we're going to minimize that with, again, bathing the body with isothiocyanates, adaptogens, phenolic compounds. You know, what we're learning is that these things protect the genome. You know, they're protective. They're gene, Vitagene protectants is basically what they are. And even from a standpoint of looking at the complexity of cancer formation in the body, they're able to limit and minimize that process tremendously by both inhibiting some of the damage in the cell. So we're inhibiting damage, then we're repairing damage, and we're protecting against insults to the cell. But the other thing that these same compounds can do is that they can recognize cells that are going away or becoming abnormal and actually activate, in those cases, apoptosis. And so get a cell that says, you can't be repaired anymore, you're too bad, so it's time for you to die. Because in cancer, those cells develop immortal genes. And so we want to minimize that, and that's how you develop cancer, basically. It's not just a fast proliferation. It's the ability to evade apoptosis that really makes the cancer cell.
What about stomach acid? How do you treat? You know, when we get older, we don't make enough stomach acid. Sometimes, how do you treat that?
With herbs, we use herbs that are carminatives and bitters, often predominantly. So, I don't use very. Some of the strong herbs very frequently in people that are very, very deficient, like the super bitters. But I love an herb called bolda. I actually like chamomile and lemon balm, particularly with that. But things like golden seal, anything with a bitter quality is going to help stimulate better gastric secretions. Then you use things that warm the stomach up a little bit. We use herbs like prickly ash or even ginger or aromatic herbs like cardamom and cinnamon and tangerine peel. So we're getting more warmth to the stomach. We're getting a little bit of the bitter quality. with some of the other bidders. And the only other thing two other things that I do is apple cider vinegar. I am a fan of that, so I'll give usually a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in warm water sipped during a meal. Or I will also do some green papaya, which helps the body produce particularly a lot of the enzymes, like the proteolytic enzymes, amylase, protease, and lipase. And so the green papaya can either be in a capsule or you can actually buy it. And I have my patients make what's called green papaya salad and just have a little bit of that each day with their meal. So they have their apple cider vinegar, they have the green papaya salad, they normally have an herbal formula they might take, and then afterwards they would drink a tea. The tea would have some demulcents, things like maybe a little marshmallow root, some chamomile, some fennel seeds, some ginger, some orange peel, and that's what we do. I don't use enzymes, again, because we want the body to be encouraged to make enzymes. We don't want to give them unless we have to, unless the person's very sick and we need to get them through a period because they don't have enough energy to digest. That's the thing. Most people's bodies are so stressed and they have no reservoir of energy that the reason why they don't digest is that their body can't direct energy to digestion. It's too preoccupied with other things that are now perceived by the body as more essential. The digestion suffers.
We've got about 12 minutes. I'd like for you to tell us, well, first I want to ask you a question before you do this, but before we get through, I want you to tell us again where we can buy this book, okay, and where we can find you and how to contact your office. But one thing I'd like to ask you about is most people who are spiritually awake have gotten there by a reason, a dark night of the soul or something to wake them up. And so I always like, if I know someone has had a spiritual awakening, I like to personalize their interview to tell us a little bit how you got awake.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's an ongoing process. So very much, I was brought up Catholic, went to Catholic school my whole life, and questioned faith and religion and is there a God or isn't there? If there is and there's any sense in what we would say is belief in a God, then we either should make that a priority in our life or just forget about it. There's really not an on-the-fence thing when it comes to faith, in my opinion. You either dedicate your life for that reason. You know, you cannot serve two masters. You know, so I really believe in that. You cannot. There's no way. So you either follow what you believe is God, and I always see God in three different ways. I obviously, one I call a cosmic God, for me, is my Eastern Christian Franciscan faith, which is my belief in God in that cosmic way, which is totally based on faith because there's no way to prove anything. But the other two ways we all can share as human beings. One is how we see God in each other, and mostly how loving we are, how selfless we are, how kind we are, how compassionate we are. That's what life is all about, striving to be better at all of those things. And the third way is through nature. Nature is constantly revealing a face of our Creator right before us. And there's nothing that we can... You just look at the perfection in nature. Everything, and the more I learn about the healing capacity of herbs and the way they're being studied molecularly, it's so revealing to believing in God, believe it or not. You look at the compound curcumin from turmeric, and now we see that compound has actually shown to possibly be suppressive to cancer in more than 300 different pathways in the body. And that's what we know right now. Just the single compound, not the herb. So it's just amazing. So I look at, I see nature and I see plants and I see God. I see the love that can be transferred from one human to another, from one living being to another living being. I see God. And then for me, I'm a better person because of my faith, you know, because of my belief. And it was St. Francis that really got me to say, you know, I should just stay Catholic, because it's every religion can be looked at for its corruption and its fallacies and all the things we can see wrong with it. But it was St. Francis that said, if he could be such an amazing human being and never have to start his own religion to do that, who am I to do that? And so when you go to the Gospels and you just study your faith, you know, and again, you just look at the words of Christ, you study the Beatitudes, it's not that complicated, you know, and it's all about just loving. That's all religion is just how much love you can give and pour out. That's all it is. And if your faith doesn't make you a better lover, then you should find a different faith.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
And it's still at the crust of everything that I do, you know, and I have become the person I am, and I've learned what I have learned mostly because of my dedication. I am the hardest worker. You know, when I work with my patients, I mean, I have stage 4 cancer patients living 20 years, but I can't say it's because of a nerve. I can only say it's because of the dedication and hard work that I put at, and I just ask other people for the same thing. I said, I'm going to do my absolute best. That's how I become who I am. You try your best. We hopefully might get another doctor. We might get a doctor or another practitioner that feels the same way. We'll work together as a team, and then the rest we can just leave to God. And we never have to worry about anything else other than doing our best, ever.
So if you don't mind, I'd like for you to talk about, how do you support pancreas? I didn't remember to ask you that question. Do you give pancreatin, or what do you do to support the pancreas?
Well, only for somebody that's got pancreatic cancer, then I will use pancreatin for that. That's the exception to that. Otherwise, herbs are really good for supporting the pancreas. You know, burdock is a great herb. You know, all the inulin-rich plants are really good for supporting the pancreas. That could be artichokes. That could be sunchokes. Chicory, dandelion, burdock, those are the one thing I do I work with a lot of the herbs. Like, we have a formula called IG sensitizer that supports the pancreas as well, with some of those compounds like the pterocarpus, which is shown to regenerate the pancreas, one of the only things in the world that's shown to actually regenerate the pancreas. So that's kind of what I do. Or, you know, that. And one of the ways you can tell with insulin resistance in a blood test, very simple test, is called a C-peptide. And so if someone believes they have diabetes or the beginnings of diabetes, and the way you know how resistant you are is if your C-peptide is elevated or even the high end of normal, then your pancreas is pushing out a lot of insulin. Even though everything else is wrong, it's not a problem with your pancreas. If your C-peptide is on the low or low normal side, then pretty much you can support your pancreas to do a better job. It's not doing what we want it to do. So that's a test that I don't think very many people run, but it's a very valuable test in that situation.
Is it a specific test or does it come like in a group if you go to the doctor, if he runs all, you know,
it's,
I can't think,
usually
like
not part of a panel. It's usually it has to happen outside. And so if you look at fasting insulin, you might look at hemoglobin A1C. You could look at fasting glucose. I like to add into that group always C-peptide. That's what I do.
Okay.
And then you can look at adiponectin and leptin if you want to throw that in too. And you're getting, you know, but if they're, you know, if someone is, you know, androgen deprived, then that's going to affect that panel too. You know, so it's when you work with adaptogens, you're nourishing the whole thing. So then you're left with, well, what specifics do I need to do along with the total nourishment? And that kind of concept is so effective. And I always tell people to see their health in three layers. This is very important too, or three ways. What do we need to get you feeling better over the next days, weeks, or couple of months? And what are we doing looking at it from the next year or 2 years? But then ultimately, where do you want to be 5 and 10 years from now? And so when we work with herbs, we're looking at things that are kind of an investment in your long-term wellness, and we're still trying to correct some things right away so you can get feeling better. I think therapy? What do we need to do right now? Like, even if someone's vitamin D is really low, we're under this belief that we're supposed to radically change it and give massive doses, like 50,000. Who's to say that's the best thing to do? I mean, in the body, when the body's adjusted to whatever it is, being low in vitamin D, and I'm not saying we don't try to get it up there and get it better, and we do, we should, but is it better to flood it right away and change it dramatically, abruptly, or is it better to see it come up over months and months and months? It's just a question, and I'm always asking questions like that. What's the best way long-term, not just short-term, to deal with this?
That makes so much sense. I've not thought about it that way, but it's like almost like, do you want to do energy medicine, or do you want to stick your finger in an electrical socket?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just make, you know, a radical change like that. That's a very interesting perspective. Okay, why don't you, we've got just 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes maybe. Talk about anything you want to do, talk about in those few minutes, and repeat, please, again, where we can get your book and your websites.
So my personal website and blog is my name, DonnieYance.com, DonnieYance. And you can learn a lot about me. And then the book can be gotten through our, discounted through our, through either the foundation, MediriFoundation.org, which is the clinic that I work within, is in that foundation, which is called Center for Natural Healing, C-E-N-T-R-E. Or my product line company also, which is called Natura Health Products, and that's Natura, N-A-T-U-R-A, healthproducts.com. And so those are the three best websites. If you're interested in my music, I'm also a musician. I have a website for a CD that I did with an original band called Infusion, and that's infusionusa.com, which you can listen to some of music. I'm a jazz musician, but the music on this CD is kind of more contemporary and more of a very eclectic sound, in that it's very modern but jazzy and funky and hip-hoppy and Latin at times, and so it's its own sound, so definitely worth getting, because the only other thing I've done all my life is be a musician, and I think very musically...
Do you have CDs?
Excuse me, I'm a bass player.
Do you have CDs?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah,
on that website.
Yes, we do. And I'm John Coltrane's my favorite musician, so I named my son after him. So my son's name is Coltrane, and I, you know, when you read my book and you get into the spiritual chapter, I have quite a bit on music throughout my book, actually, and not just the importance of music as a whole, but also just thinking musically, just thinking, you know, how much is changing all the time, you know, how our bodies are musical and they're responsive. They're not, you know, we're not robots. And so if we were, we'd do very well on drugs. But I think we are meant to be responsive.
Sorry, Don, we're going to get cut off.
Yep, that's fine.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank
you.
Your
fabulous
book.
Too.
It was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good evening. Good night.
Thank you. You too.